VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here, as always, bright, sunny, and colorful on this Saturday morning. That's kind of a nice but somewhat muggy day in end of July. So we're almost through 7 months of this year. I still have absolutely no idea where it went, but we're here. Anyway, to all the regulars, welcome back. Thanks for always being here. You're the reason we get up and do this every week and always have. You may know, if you've been listening long enough, there are only two times in the 4.5 years we've been doing this show that we weren't here. And both times it was because we got kicked out of town for an impending hurricane. Other than that, we get here on whatever holidays or whatever. As long as the radio show is running and we're not evacuated, we will be here. So,
Or calling in from somewhere else.
That's still here. Yeah. One of us is here to receive it anyway. Anyway, as always, we will bring you a lot of up-to-date information about not just the markets and investing, but also anything that has to do with your personal financial situation. There aren't many topics you could think of that touch a greater number of people than personal finance. Some touching in better ways than others, perhaps, but even if you're in trouble, you still got to know how to get out of it. So if you want to listen to us, we'll tell you all the things that are on our mind this week. But if you would rather change the course of the show a little bit, it's as simple as picking up your telephone and dialing 904-222-8255, 222-TALK for short. And AJ this week, who's filling in for a vacationing Alan, will get your phone call right put up on our board. And as always, you will go right to the head of the line. So that said, records are made to be broken, and once again, records were broken twice.
Yep. And
a quick note to the June 1st caller, who I'm going to answer on December 1st. Pulling out's not looking that good right at this juncture, but that's not a value judgment yet.
Would have said the same thing at this time last year, though.
Yeah, that's the truth. Well, actually, I might be sticking my neck out on December 1 based on last year. We had 11 great months and December.
Right.
So maybe I'll give a preliminary on December 1 and a final in early January.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, it was so pretty good week in the market. Unless you were invested in the Dow, then it was just a pretty flat week.
Shows you the impact of a couple of bad reports on a 30-stock index.
I know I say it almost every week, but the Dow is a terrible measure of the stock market.
There was a newscast I was listening to on the way in here, and it said that another up week for the stock market this past week, the Dow gained 51. That's not the story of this week. People, get a life.
Yeah, seriously. The Dow was up 0.1%, and the NASDAQ was up 2.3%, the S&P 1.7%. So I think the overall market was a little bit better than the Dow.
A little bit.
And that was just a few bad reports from, I believe, Caterpillar and Boeing were the biggest losers. But actually, the other stocks in the index did pretty well. You just wouldn't know it by looking at the index. It's kind of been the story of the year, though. If you look at the year-to-date returns on the Dow, it's still pretty solid at 16.6. But then you look over at the S&P, it's over 20%, and the NASDAQ's over 25%. So you definitely know where you want to be invested this year, and it's not the Dow.
No.
There is a lot going on right now, financially speaking. Next week, the Fed is pretty widely expected to cut interest rates in an economy that is expanding at a pretty rapid rate. This is somewhat unprecedented and also, in my opinion, uncalled for, but they continue to signal that they're going to do it, and I'm just kind of, I don't know. I'm at a loss to describe why.
Everything from business conditions to the rate of inflation, et cetera, all systems are stop. But they're going to do it.
Yeah, it makes absolutely no sense. And I really, would challenge someone to go back in history and find another time that this has happened when conditions were as good as they are now and the Fed is cutting interest rates. I don't get it. And we're not even at historically high levels of interest rates. We're at historically low levels of interest rates. And the problem with this is not that they're doing it. It's during the next downturn, this actually gives them less ammunition to work with. So the higher interest rates start going into a downturn, the more you can cut them and therefore sort of stimulate and boost the economy. But if you start off at less than 2%, you just don't have much room to grow, to go, and you're going to potentially get into a situation where you might have to go negative like Europe's doing. And that is something I do not want to see.
Was it Swiss rates, I think, just fell under?
Mm-hmm.
They're negative now. Here's the deal for everybody. You're listening to a financial show, right? You think you're going to get advice from us to go buy some Swiss bonds?
Yeah, that will pay you less than what you purchased them for sometime in the future.
Yeah.
Good deal, huh?
Yeah, well, you're going to have to listen a long time to hear us say that.
Yeah, and as the kids would say, SMH, shaking my head.
Yep.
The data this week backs up what I'm saying, too. We saw the second quarter GDP come in, and it was stronger than expected at 2.1%. Now, I know some of you out there say, well, wait, last year we saw 3%, which actually just got revised down, so it's under 3%. But still, it was basically 3%. And now we're at 2.1. What's going on? Are we slowing down? Maybe that's why the Fed's hiking. But no, the second quarter is always a little bit lower. That 2.1% actually supports a full year projection of about 3%. So a lot of that has to do with inventories, business inventories, which tend to rise during the second and third quarter.
Pre-Christmas, as it
exactly.
Were.
So they're building inventory to sell at the end of the year, and that makes the GDP look lower, but then you're going to get a spike in the fourth quarter and potentially in the first quarter of next year.
There's also a lot of out-of-pocket money on behalf of consumers everywhere, which still spent a lot, but because tax bills are due, along with first quarter estimates in April, and a lot of people are on board with that sort of thing, so they might delay purchases a little bit later into the year.
Yep, and if you look at core GDP, which just measures the most important parts of the GDP, which are growth in personal consumption, business investment, and home building, that actually came in at 3.2%, which is really solid. So the GDP report definitely does not support a rate cut.
No, and there's also a little component in there, and you know, when you add up a little bit with everybody across the country, it becomes a big little bit. And the gas pump was treating us pretty nicely in the second quarter.
Also true, yes. In addition to GDP, we saw jobless claims come in, and they dropped by 10,000 more, down to 206,000, which is not a recent low, but it's really close. And the way things are trending, I would not be surprised to see a new low in the next month or so. I mean, they were at 240 two or three weeks ago. And now they're at 206.
You remember my admonition of last week? The 216,000 that was announced last week was, people don't ever talk about this. It was relative to a four-day week because of the
right.
July 4th holiday. This time at 206,000, those offices were open all 5 days. So yeah. This number is unbelievably low.
It's actually a record 94 weeks below 250,000.
Yeah, incredible, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There is just so much strength in this economy, and the strength has trickled down. The returns to labor are growing faster than the returns to capital and the returns to entrepreneurship. That's really good. If you don't have a job now and you want one, you can get one. It is not up to everybody else to bring it to you. You got to go get it, but trust me, they're there. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll have a trivia question right after the break. And we got all kinds of stuff. We'll wrap up the market and all. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Lines are open, 904-222-TALK, 222-8255. Trivia question sponsored, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 636-7888. And that, of course, is a 904 number. This week's trivia question Adam came up with.
I did. And what I would like to know is, what is the country with the most U.S. retirees living abroad? So they track this by where they send Social Security checks. What is the country that is most frequent, has the most Social Security checks being sent to it every month?
I'm going to narrow it down for people just to make it a little easier. It is not North Korea, and it is not Cuba.
Neither of those is correct.
Now you've only got about, what, 184 other choices, something like that?
Yeah, neither of those are in the top 10, actually.
No, I'm not really that surprised. All right, let's just wrap up the market wrap. There's a couple of things that need to be said yet.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention a couple of other things that support the lack of data that would support a rate cut. And one of those is durable goods, which increased by 2% in June. And you might hear the argument that the transportation sector, which rose 3.8% in June, was responsible for that. But if you strip that out, the rest of the report was still up by 1.2%, which is an incredibly strong month for that report. Mm-hmm. So solid numbers there. And then the last area is housing. That's been pretty volatile lately. You may have noticed when the rates did start rising, some of the data started looking weaker. And then when rates started dropping this year, it started looking stronger. And I think that was supported this month by new single-family home sales. They were up 7% in June and are now up 4.5% from last year. Existing home sales dropped slightly, coming in 1.7% below the previous month. But quarter two outpaced quarter one by more than 1.4%. So the trend is definitely positive in both existing and new homes.
And the ongoing problem in all of those?
Lack of supply.
Yep.
And mainly in the houses under 250,000. Yep. I did want to mention that. And I don't think that's a problem that's going to go away without some government intervention, because there is just not a profitable way to build $250,000 or under houses in cities.
Yeah.
You have to go way out in the country where land is dirt cheap. Not even here. You could do it out west or north.
I'm using here in the radio sense.
Oh, yeah.
The radius of the radio signal.
Yeah. You can't even, I bet you can't do it in St. Johns County anywhere anymore.
No, probably not.
And maybe up north and out west, but it's just too hard to do. So I think you're going to have to start seeing some subsidies for housing in that price range.
Very possible. We have a little bit more, but first, good morning, Rob.
Good morning. How you doing, Steve?
Great. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. What's happening?
Well, I have a question for you, and I want to try and answer a trivia question.
Okay, shoot.
I'm going to say Costa Rica.
You know what? That's what I guessed.
Yep, one of my favorite places, and there are a lot of expats living there, but it is not even in the top 10 for retirees. I was very shocked by that.
Yeah, I would have guessed it. I can't think of anything else that would come to mind with that question, and that's why we used it.
Well, I can't wait to hear the answer because I'm ready to go.
I'm not going to make a comment about that. Adam's been to Costa Rica enough. It seems like if you're going anywhere, that wouldn't be a half bad idea.
No, it's a great place to retire.
Yeah, it sounds, looks like it. All right, what's on your mind question-wise?
My wife and I both have non-deductible IRAs from back in the 90s. She mm-hmm. was a school teacher with a pension. We made too much money. How do I want to unwind that in another year after I retire and transfer that to a Roth. How do I know what my cost basis is in that going way back then? I really don't know that is.
Was part of your money put in pre-tax and part after-tax?
Yeah, hers was all after-tax. Mine was a very little bit pre-tax, but yeah, I just...
Okay.
I guess I need to know how much was principal and how much we've earned since then, and how do I...
Actually, let's start with hers. Take the money anytime you want, as much as you want.
Wait, no. Are you trying to take the money, or are you trying to convert to a Roth?
Well, either one, but how do I know what's...
With hers, it's no problem. She never deducted any, or never deducted any contribution of any sort for the whole time. Then it's 100% tax-free conversion to a Roth, or you can take it out. You can do whatever you want to with it. Not a problem.
All right. Even the earnings that she's
no,
had?
You still would owe capital gains on the earnings.
Okay.
Okay. I meant
the basis.
Yeah,
that would be.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The money. Now, basis is the problem dealing with you. So you've got to try to reconstruct what was put in on a pre-tax and what on a post-tax basis.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you convert to the Roth, the pre-tax part, it would be a percentage of the whole account. of what you put in and the growth on it.
Correct.
And they're going to want that. And you can't convert only the non-deducted money to the Roth. You can only do it pro rata.
Right. So
whatever. It's like annuitizing in that respect. So you're basically down to guessing unless you have those old records.
Guessing is what I was thinking, but I didn't know if the IRS would accept a guess or not.
This situation comes up, unfortunately, way too often because cost basis was not required to be tracked by custodians until relatively recently. So I think that if you make a good faith effort to go back and estimate your cost basis and then possibly, you know, err on the side of conservatism and document everything that you did, that you could make a good case to the IRS that this is what I tried to do. And if you want to charge me, you know, because I didn't pay for the whole thing, I mean, I really tried to make this right. I would consult an accountant as well, a CPA, but that's what I would do if I was in your situation.
Yeah, and the other thing is, why do you want to go ahead with your own when you could just take money out? If you come up with a formula, like I did this 40% pre-tax, as you take money out eventually, first off, you're going to have to, I guess. The nice thing about talking myself into this now, but if you get it all into the Roth, you don't ever have required minimum distributions. So if you're looking at never having to take an RMD, then it's a good idea.
Right. Yeah. And this only represents part of IRA money that we have. We've got Roths and we've got other IRA money that I've tried not to commingle with this, just from transfers from jobs or something like that. But so I was just trying to, this is just two small pots of money. I'm just trying to condense and.
I think it's the right strategy for you to do the conversion if you can. Yeah. If you truly cannot locate records about when you purchased, I think you just have to do your best to estimate what you would owe and make that payment. And then if you get audited, you at least have some documentation that you tried to do the right thing. That doesn't always work with the IRS, but it has a lot better chance of succeeding than just not paying and hoping you don't get caught.
How much are you talking about, Rob? How much are you talking about in your account?
$80,000, maybe.
And it's worth taking a good guess.
Yeah, for
sure. If you were talking about $10,000, $15,000, I'd just say claim it, pay the taxes. But $80,000?
Yeah, it's worth doing a little bit of research and trying to give your best estimate.
Yeah, from your memory, if you don't have all those old tax returns, you can sort of say, well, if I remember back when we were doing this and it was 50-50 or something. If you create some kind of a paper trail, not exactly documentary type, not that quality because you can't do that. But if you come up with a plausible story, first off, the chances of it ever being looked at are slim and none.
And then how could they prove you wrong? They don't have the data either.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, they don't have any reason. They'd have to suspect fraud to look back more than 7 years anyway. So I say be reasonable, be smart, and do it.
Yeah, and maybe consult your CPA if you have.
Yeah, I would. Have you had a long-term tax preparer?
No, I have not.
Okay.
Well, we did years and years ago. She's probably dead by now, but I've been doing TurboTax for probably the last 10 years or so.
Okay. And when did you stop contributing to that account?
Again, years ago.
Okay.
It's been a long time.
Then you got the right idea. Just like I say, your wife says no problem whatsoever. She wants to do it. Earnings will, of course, be a problem for you, but the contributions are not. But on yours, you're going to have to take that pro rata part and just be very reasonable.
All right.
Well, IRS is not that hard on you, by the way. A lot of people are scared to death of IRS for some of them for good reason. But for most routine transactions, I've really never had any problem with them. They're very reasonable, very accommodating.
Especially if you're not trying to do anything that you know is shady.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Well, good luck.
All right. Thank you both. Enjoy the show.
Thanks. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Great question, Rob. Thank you.
Yeah. There's a whole wad of the stuff that's going to come up if they ever do what I hope they do. If they repeal the estate tax, it's always been, the 1 year we had it, it's always been that they're going to then put a limit on the capital gains that are free. So if you inherit a bunch of things, then they're going to have a situation where you have to figure out what your parents or grandparents or whatever actually paid for something, and you can guarantee there won't be records on it. This is going to be a big old mess.
Yeah, especially with the amount of wealth transfer that's happening right now between the baby boomers and their children.
What year was it they finally made custodians keep track of and transfer over cost basis?
I don't remember, but it's been relatively recently.
Yeah, 2011, 2012, something like that. And in that time, things have gotten a lot better, but it doesn't help you for things you owned before that time.
No, and there's still some things that you need to do. If you do inherit things, you have to tell the custodian to adjust your basis, and if you don't tell them, they won't do it.
No, so those are good questions, and those are the things that you might want to get some help with along the way, particularly with your tax person. Okay, we've got to run. We'll be right back after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
A quick note. We might have said something a little misleading to Rob when we mentioned that he will owe capital gains on the earnings in his wife's account. That is a capital gain. It's a gain on capital. It will be taxed as ordinary income. We wanted to clarify that it's all considered short-term.
Yep, that was my mistake.
Well, it's not really a mistake. It just wasn't
complete. Well, it's the correct terminology, but what you're going to pay on it is different.
Yeah. How capital gains are taxed is a very complex thing that we'll get into one of these days. But yes, it is a capital gain. No, it is not at the lower rate, just so everybody's clear on that. Because it's going to be some money. There's going to be some money changing hands
definitely.
On this deal. All right, trivia question still out there. What country has the most retired Americans receiving Social Security checks? And we know it's not Costa Rica.
Right. And if you listen to the show, you have considered yourself warned several times.
I love this.
The IRS, speaking of the IRS. Yeah. Oh, wait. I'll get back to that in a minute.
Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
What's up today?
I'm going to try your trivia, but then I've got a question to ask you.
Great.
The answer to your trivia question, is it Belize?
It is not.
No, it is not Belize. That's another great guess because it's a really popular destination, but it is, again, I don't believe it even made the top 10.
Isn't that strange? We have a bunch of mixed messages coming out of that area from retirees. But not that one. All right,
one of the reasons I say Belize is because their language is English.
Yes.
So you don't have to learn you don't have to know Spanish or learn Spanish.
Yeah. I like your logic, but
I do too.
Unfortunately not correct.
Okay.
What I think on both of these, just as an aside, I think they're probably just such small countries that it is just a pure numbers game, more, nothing less. That's just a guess though. All right, what's your question?
Okay. If you had, and this may not be in your purview of financial advice or suggestions, what is your opinion of investing in mutual funds versus ETFs?
Oh, that's a long topic.
Not really. You can sum it up. I like ETFs better.
Okay, but that's not the complete story.
No, it's not.
It depends what you're trying to do. For instance, a small saver starting to save who wants to have a sort of an automatic investment such as a balanced fund or a target date fund where you get stocks, bonds, and cash mixed in and somebody does it for you, those are best done through mutual funds.
Well, historically.
Historically. It is coming around. Yeah, I agree. There are some things showing up. But historically, we've used things like Oakmark Equity Income, Columbia
Balanced Fund.
And that sort of thing, to sort of put your contributions on autopilot until you get enough money to do a more formal asset allocation. But for doing sector investing or index investing, you can't beat an ETF for many, many reasons.
Well, see, I am retired, and I have money in stocks and mutual funds and ETFs, and I was thinking about taking some of the mutual funds that I have and selling them and buying ETFs because I'm really interested in this point in time, not necessarily growth, but income.
Okay. You could accomplish getting income either way. Mm-hmm. It's not so much the vehicle that you invest in. It's what the fund or the mutual fund or the ETF is designed to do. So there are some really good income-oriented mutual funds, and there are some really good income-oriented ETFs. So I wouldn't base your decision on what type of investment vehicle. I would look more at what the goal of those products are.
Another thing to consider, though, the ETFs are far more tax efficient than mutual funds.
True.
They're not required to pay out all their dividends and capital gains during the year. So if you're having a tax problem, meaning I call a problem anything above about 24% marginal rate, then you might want to start looking at some more tax efficient ways to do what you do. Also, a caution on the mutual funds. If for whatever mutual funds you're using, and this goes to anybody listening out there, make sure they are no load. There's no reason to pay to buy and sell mutual funds these days. You can always find a no-load fund that does exactly what you want it to do. There's many to choose from. No B shares, no C shares, no A shares, no load, period.
And the no-loads usually, though, don't they have usually like you have to hold them for maybe a year? And if you sold them before a year, you may have to pay something. But if you hold them more than a year, you may not.
No, there's a usually 60 to 90 day period that has a redemption cost. And that was remember the old days in around 98, 99 where everybody was day trading? People started day trading mutual funds and they said, this is not our business model. We're going to sock you a couple percent if you take it out and haven't left it there for a couple of months.
Yeah, most of those types of fees are in the process of being eliminated anyway.
Yeah, people aren't day trading anymore to any extent.
Okay, well, thank you for your advice.
Yeah, if you ever want to call and talk a little more specifically about anything, just give us a call at the office, and we'd be happy to answer a couple of questions. Or if you're looking for suggestions, I own this, but I really have something that might be more efficient or something, we're always happy to talk to people.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it. Howard.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good.
Are you better than when I last saw you?
Which was just a few minutes ago.
It's about 41 minutes ago.
Yeah, this is Howard from Real Estate Radio. I just want to say you guys do a fantastic job, and I always listen to you right after our show.
Well, thank you. We're always listening to you before ours, so it works well.
So I want to take a guess on your trivia question.
Please do.
I would think that it's probably Mexico, since it's just so close to us and has a lot of shoreline, and that's where people may retire.
That was my second choice.
Excellent guess.
And it's not right.
Actually, number three on the list is Mexico.
Number three. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
My reasoning and yours were exactly the same on that, but no, it isn't that one.
Okay. Well, then it's probably my second guess, and I won't give it. But I really enjoy listening to your show. It's great information, and you always give information on housing as well. Mm-hmm. And I want to say that your information on housing, of course, is nationwide.
That's correct. Yeah.
And we give information on what is going on locally, and they are a bit different.
They are.
So
yep.
And I just want to point that out to everyone, but yours, of course, is great information to have, and I want to thank you for giving that and giving great information to everyone.
So yeah, thanks for pointing that out.
Keep listening.
Thanks for pointing that out, Howard. I always try and bring up, or I usually try and bring up Jacksonville. I didn't today. And the great news is that usually Jacksonville's information is a little bit better than the national information.
Yeah.
So. That's encouraging.
What are you finding in your business? Have you got enough inventory?
Not at the price levels that you were mentioning.
Exactly what Adam was saying.
$250,000. The ones under $250,000, if it looks good and it's priced right, is usually sold the first day.
Wow.
I have a question for you now. How's that for return?
Okay.
What is the second best town in Florida in which to retire?
The second best.
Yep. According to Forbes?
According to Forbes magazine, yep.
I don't know.
That would be the Villages. 115,000 people with a median home price of $260,000. That begs the question, I think. What's the number one?
The first number one.
Somewhere
in Bradenton area? I don't know.
No, it's a little closer to home. I'll give you a hint. You're in it. right now.
Really?
Yes. Forbes just ranked Jacksonville as the number one city in Florida in which to retire. Population 880,000. Median home price 165,000.
Well, that's why we keep talking about how great it is to live here. You know, we tell a lot of people that are moving here from out of town, we tell people how friendly it is here, how great the seasons are, how much there is to do. It's a great place to come. It's a great place to live. There's so much to do. There's so much to see. And, you know, you have listeners from all over the country just like we do. And if you're thinking about coming here, Angela and I would be happy to help you. You, of course, will handle their finances.
Absolutely.
Joe Pippin in the morning will handle their legal things. And what more can you ask for?
Saturday morning on WBOB. We got you covered, right?
Who needs a Chamber of Commerce when you have Howard?
That's the truth. Take care of yourself. See you soon.
There you go.
Thanks for the call. All right, we're going to take a last break here before the end of the show, but we've got a few more things to wrap up. Keep the calls coming. We got it narrowed down now. I still don't think anybody's going to get it right, though. Think outside the box a little bit. That's my next clue. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
We wanted to wrap up a couple things on the market, and again, the lines are still open for the trivia question or any other question, but the earnings season is getting out toward the center of it now, and the earnings beats are coming in at a solid 68.7%. Revenue beat rate is at a tolerable 57.6%. If it doesn't get worse than that all the way through, this is going to be a really nice earnings season. So we'll see what happens, won't we? The economy is good. Good morning, Jim.
Hey, good morning.
What's happening?
I just want to take a stab at your trivia.
Sure. All right, what's your guess?
Canada.
You got it.
Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner. How about that?
So Canada.
My only question was why?
It's by a wide margin, too. It has almost 70,000 U.S. expat retirees, and the next closest is Japan at just over 45,000. So I was shocked. I did not expect that.
No, I honestly did not think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Too cold.
I did not think that you were going to get this. I didn't think anybody was going to get this. And I am duly impressed that you came up with it. In fact, I'm so impressed that we're going to put you on hold, and AJ will get your address and such, and we'll send you a little something. What do we got this week? Do you know?
It's a gift card, and I haven't looked at where it's from.
Could be Publix or
something like that.
Okay. Well, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Love listening to your show.
Thanks. Mike.
Hey, guys. Hey, I listen to y'all every weekend, and I had a 401k question for you. Okay. I hear there's something going through, and I don't know if y'all know anything about it, some kind of bill going through. It's called the Secure Act.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
401ks. I'm putting 24% in right now, and it increases every year by 2% till I retire at least.
Okay.
So is this thing anything I need to look at, or is there anything that is going to affect my 401k?
Not in a negative way, no. The only thing that's going to change as far as your 401k is when you're retired and you have to start taking required minimum distributions, the age is going from 70 and a half to 72 if that bill passes. So that is the only thing that should be affected with your 401k, or probably at that point it would be an IRA.
For normal people in normal situations who are not inheriting their money, this is a very good bill. There's some little quirks in it about inherited goods, but in general, I think you'll like this a lot.
So you guys like it or not?
Overall, yeah, I support it overall.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't like the inherited IRA changes, but other than that, we support it.
I tell you what, though, I'd trade the inherited IRA changes for that couple years later on your required minimums.
Agreed.
That the big thing we're trying to do here is index your age to the increase in life expectancy. It's been 70 and a half since I can remember. And meanwhile, we keep adding years on to life expectancy. The rules are obsolete. They should have been indexed in the first place, but nobody thought of it. So, yes, net, I am a supporter of the bill. And there's one more thing. it's out of the House and it's in the Senate, and McConnell is looking at this as a chance to maybe get something to run it through. And the thing I hope he goes for, remember in the Tax Act of 2017 that the individual rates expire after 2015. They had to do that because of the stupid Byrd rule, which I won't get into right now. But they promised, Paul Ryan promised, as one of the many promises he broke before he left, he promised to make those rates permanent. I think this is the golden moment for McConnell to make those rates permanent, and I hope he jumps on it.
That would be great.
I think it would pass. So,
well, I really appreciate y'all's show on Saturday. I like listening to y'all. So,
thank you.
Whatever y'all think is working for me.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks very much.
Bye, guys. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Good morning, John.
Hi, how are you doing?
Never better.
My question is, I have two grandchildren that are 15 years old, and they're college-bound, and I'd like to give them some money, but I'd like to, I hope, maybe go put the money in a trust so that when they hit 21, they don't decide, well, gee, here's a nice amount of money I can go play with, whatever. I'd like to be able to hold the money for them so possibly when they get out of college that they could either use the money to start a career or, look forward to maybe helping buy a house or something like that. Is the trust instrument the best thing that I can control that will allow their money to grow in their name so they'll have access to it at the time that I decide it's appropriate for them to have the money?
Well, let's look at a couple of the options here. You could do a 529 plan. That would require them to use the money for college-related expenses.
I don't like
I'm getting there.
Okay.
You don't really have the optimal amount of time to make that pay because that kind of investment takes a while and it becomes a little less flexible. You can do a uniform transfer to Minors Act account, but that they will own the money when they hit a certain age, and you don't really want that. You've mentioned control. No. You want to keep it. You could put it in an account in their joint name, but that means they own half of it and they can rob you blind. So what I would do, and Adam, please feel free to correct me or improve or whatever, but I would put it in a separate account that you own and you control and not even put their name on it except transfer on death as a beneficiary clause, more or less, then you can gift them the money up to $15,000 a year as they need it for college.
Well, their college is already paid for, so okay, the college is not a question. All I'm trying to do is protect the money that when they hit 21 or 24, whatever age category you would want to call it, they don't have access to the money. I want them to be able to have at least 10 years growth from this point forward that would allow them the money so that they couldn't touch the money and hope that it would continue to grow until maybe they're 35 or 40.
Yeah, a trust would accomplish that.
It would accomplish that, absolutely. I'm not sure you have to go to that extreme. You could just do the accounts yourself, but you can absolutely fund a trust as a brokerage-style account, and they would be the beneficiaries of the trust. You would be the trustee, and it would be very specific. On attainment of such and such age, they can either have it all or whatever you specify, half at 21 and half at 25, whatever you want, it can be written into the trust.
Yep, I think that's the way to go.
Okay, thank you.
A quick question. Do you listen to Joe Pippin in the 8 o'clock hour on this show on Saturdays?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Call Joe and ask him what it would cost you to get that done if you want it done professionally. He's up here a lot. Anyway, and he does a lot of work for us, and he really knows what he's doing.
Okay, sure will. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate
Thanks,
the time. Boy, where do you get grandparents like that? Huh? Your kids would like to know, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would. I started this earlier, and I just really wanted to mention it because we have been talking about it a lot. The IRS this week decided to send letters to more than 10,000 holders of cryptocurrency.
Oh, yeah.
And warning them that if they fail to pay income tax on their transactions, that they could face some pretty severe penalties. And so we've been saying that this crypto thing is not as anonymous as everyone wants it to be. And the IRS has been eyeing it, and they are starting to make moves. So if you hold crypto in your portfolio and you've made money on it and not paid, you might want to rethink that.
I think the first time we were asked on the show our feelings about cryptocurrencies and such, my first comment was no. And the reason was because I fear that it's going to be used to avoid taxation on too many transactions. And it's just, it's a danger out there lurking in the woods. And now you know I was right. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that when IRS sees some untaxed transactions going through, they're not going to be very happy about
especially
that.
Especially when that same crypto goes from 3,000 to almost 20,000 in a year.
Uh-huh.
And you know a lot of people made a lot of money on that, and a lot of them didn't pay anything
that
on it.
No, yeah, we would like to see it. So you were warned, and if you've been doing that, you may want to talk to your tax preparer and see, maybe I should declare a little something here and there. But there was a sale of a Lamborghini or something like that way early.
Yeah, it was the first Lamborghini that was purchased with cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
I remember that.
And do you think the sales tax to the state was paid on that or not? I'm not saying it wasn't.
I think the dealer would have to, but I don't know.
I don't know. There's just too much potential for shady things going on there. So, anyway, but this was a real fun show, people. If you think if it sounds like we're having fun, there's a reason for it, and that reason is you. So we appreciate all the phone calls, and I'm still pretty much blown away that the answer was, not only the answer was Canada, but somebody got it. that was beyond what I figured was going to happen today. So it's been a lot of fun, and we'll try to make it that much fun next week, too. So tell your friends. The show is growing quickly, and we appreciate it every single week. All right, we're going to have a whole bunch of things that were left over from this week for next. We'll see you then, same time. This is the Ben Wee Financial Hour.